Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health, nutrition, and sustainability in our modern world. As always, I'm joined by my very good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Now, being politically correct, as you are in Southern California, good morning to both of you.
I haven't been politically correct since the third grade.
And Simon, I want you to include me as a very good friend. I've only known you for about 6 weeks, but I want to be a friend.
Not just a Facebook Jim friend. Rubis, our guest today. And, Jim, I warn you, this is your last chance to withdraw that. Remember, Simon is British, and you have to be careful with Brits.
Actually, Manny, I saw some pictures earlier this week of your vegetable garden. It looks like you're growing up quite a storm. What have you got planted?
Well, we have a variety of things. Annually, we do tomatoes. And, Jim, last year we had 330 pounds of tomatoes in my backyard. And Ash and I grow about 17 or 18 different types of tomatoes, yellow ones, Johnson ones from Tennessee, all heirloom tomatoes, some original seeds, some very unusual, the lemon pears, a variety of different lemon and other tomatoes that make fabulous sauce. People traditionally just grow the reds, but when you get into the yellows, you get such a unique flavor. We grow peppers, Ashley grows three or four different types of heads of lettuce.
Cucumbers.
Swiss chard this year,
right? Swiss chard, first year for it.
And cucumbers. Oh, the cucumbers out of a natural garden are so fabulous, Simon, you can't believe it.
And Simon, this is before meeting Francis Tickey, though. I used to say, until meeting Francis a few months ago, that I grew dirt because I didn't realize that dirt is something you have to grow. But nothing would grow for me, basically. So, and I guess you had that same problem, Simon. We saw your picture of that carrot in the cabinet.
My Triffid?
Yeah. Jim, did you happen to see that?
No, I didn't see that. The only picture that I am left with from this week with you guys is the horrible one of the poor young calf. And we're talking cheerful things, so I won't bring that up. But no, I didn't see the Triffid.
Jim, I will send you a copy of it.
You don't want to miss it.
Yeah, I'll give you the thumbnail sketch.
Most people, go ahead, Simon.
We don't tend to use the bottom cabinet in the kitchen because it's way too low, too difficult to get to, and while Jan and I can certainly get down there, getting back up is a challenge. We noticed that there was something growing out of the door. And eventually, a friend of, actually a relation of Jan's, came over, and she investigated. And somehow, someone had placed a 5-pound bag of potatoes down there. No, it was potatoes. And that was the most successful crop I've ever grown.
Yeah. You see, Jim, some people grow mold under their sink, not Simon. He has to grow with potatoes.
Well, potatoes do a wonderful job of sprouting. In fact, when I was a little boy, that used to be one of my jobs along about February or March, was to go in the old cistern where we stored our vegetables and sprout the potatoes because they would start to sprout, and you wanted to peel those sprouts off so that the starch in the potato didn't change. So that was that was one of my jobs when the potatoes were that we ate were all homegrown and not from the store. The ones in the store don't usually sprout quite as well. So you must have had some organic potatoes.
You know, Jim, my mother used to take a yam and stick toothpicks on four sides and suspend it in a bowl of water, and it would grow out. She would take the plant, and she would plant it every couple of years, and she would grow her own yams in the back garden. When I was a kid, I used to be so fascinated, and I'm talking about even at 4 and 5, to run and look in the window to see how it was growing. And before we go any farther, we should really introduce you. Jim Rubis is a former guest on our show, and a current one, apparently. And Jim's somewhat of a Renaissance man. He grew up on a farm, but decided to go to college and become a librarian. And after years of helping everybody in the community, and I'm sure soaking in every book he could get his hands on, he went back to the farm, and he retired to a 400-acre farm in Iowa, which I don't think is retirement, because I'm sure Jim's working just as hard as he ever has, but I'll bet you have more time to read books. So now everybody knows who Jim is. We're going to ask him some questions.
Well,
go ahead, Jim.
Wait a second. I have a question. I want to go back on the potato thing, because I'm Irish, so I eat a lot of potatoes. And you went into the barn as a kid. And how would you do that? I mean, and you're saying there's a difference in starch?
Well, yeah. What as the year progressed, the potatoes would start to put out the little white sprouts that must have been what was coming out of Simon's cupboard.
Oh no, his looks like Swamp Thing, by the way.
if you peel or break those sprouts off, then the potato continues to keep. But when the sprouts go, the potato, of course, feeds the growth of the next years, so it breaks down that starch and puts it into a growth situation. And, of course, it softens the potato up, too. Once those sprouts really start growing, the potato's not quite as good. I have to go back here, though. Manny was talking about his mother raising yams.
Mm-hmm.
You got the biggest one.
Jim,
you are definitely at home, Jim.
Yeah, you are welcome on this program anytime.
Your turn will come, Simon. Your turn will come.
And you actually made me speechless, which is really rare, isn't it, Simon?
Trust me, that's rare. when you marry an Irish woman, you get it all, whether you want it or not. Yeah, we are also going to be joined by our friend Dr. Tickey, Francis Tickey, who is much like my wife. He's always the last to arrive. So somewhere in here, if you hear a voice jump in, it's that of Francis. So, you know, one of the things that I want to talk about today, if we're actually in a serious mood, which we're not, is what's going on in Iowa. And before we get to some of the legal stuff, I want to talk to you about what I've read in these articles, and some you've sent me and some I've seen myself, about these CAFOs opening up in a number of new areas and exposing people to all this pollution. And perhaps you can take a moment and explain for our listeners exactly what's going on out there.
Well, the legal things are really the most concern, but, you know, as far as CAFOs, we had a little bit of time when there wasn't a huge jump to continue building new ones. The prices on hogs had gone down somewhat, and the hog producers actually had a year or two of losses again after a number of years of large profits, and that's changed right now. Pork prices are not as high as beef prices, but they've gone way up again, and so there's a profit. And so right away when that happens, the corporate ags, the Cargills and the Smithfields begin to sign up more farmers to board pigs. And I call it that because so many of those farmers don't really raise the pigs anymore. They just board them there. They don't own the pigs. They just raise them for the company. So there's been some expansion again. And the one thing that's been holding that up is that corn prices are also record high prices, about $7.50 a bushel. For people who don't know what a bushel of shelled corn is 56 pounds. So it's a huge price for corn, And it brings in another one of the whole industrial ag questions. And I wish Francis was on with us right now, because he had a really good response for this. A Farm Bureau member here in our in Fairfield, our small town, had a letter to the editor saying that, don't blame us corn farmers. Ethanol is not what's raised the price of corn. It's all these other uses. But Francis responded that, I believe about 60% of Iowa's corn crop last year went to ethanol. And if 60% of the crop in our state went to ethanol and the price is $7.60, I think ethanol had a definite bearing on the price of corn.
Oh, so, obviously.
Yeah. You know, it's just another one of these denial things that go on in the ag industry. That's what we're talking about primarily is food, but it's all of corporate America along with it. And Manny, your favorite enemy, Monsanto, again, when we get to legal things, probably the most upsetting thing is a bill that's passed one house in the Iowa legislature is a bill to kill whistleblowing on animal production in Iowa, and one of the strongest lobbyists on that is Monsanto.
Yes, no, quite, and DuPont.
And DuPont.
We mm-hmm. traced down some of the contributions and directions, and DuPont's more active in Minnesota, but they're also very active in your state in funding this. And but, you know, when you take a look at this, let's talk about exactly what's going on. Tell us exactly in terms of what they're trying to stop, and if not, I can describe it for you.
Now, are you talking about in the bill?
Yeah, in the bill, the type of... Well, let's first go generally. It seems that large business, agriculture businesses, have decided that it's a threat to them to have people take whistleblower photos on their property. So rather than deal with the issues of what's going on in the property, they prefer to deal with eliminating people taking the photos. And this is akin to every kind of whistleblower situation, whether you're people have turned in companies, for example, the peanut butter company that causes salmonella. Invariably, the FDA and the USDA are so understaffed, most of the information comes from whistleblowers. The same way in our defense industry, many of the overcharges, problems with tanks and other things, Ford had a huge expose a number of years when they fudged on their testing of tanks, a variety of other areas. Jeffrey Wiegand's known as the insider because after years of fighting over tobacco, he turned over the inside documents that proved that the tobacco industry were putting poisonous materials into your cigarettes to make them burn faster, and that they have known for at least 50 to 60 years they were carcinogens, and that the increase in cancer was related to cigarettes. And by the way, Jim, it's my belief that sooner or later Monsanto and some of these other companies are going to deal with their own form of whistleblowers, where someone's going to come out and provide actual testing done by Monsanto on some of the genetically modified products that completely contradict their public stance. So here we have a situation where CAFOs are an industry where a number of nonprofit groups have put inspectors and private detectives and others into jobs and use hidden cameras, call it an alfalfa cam or whatever you want, and they've taken a series of films of what occurs in terms of animal abuse and other things. One of course, is published in our blog, which you saw earlier this week. Ashley has another one that I find just as bad that summarizes chickens, pigs, all the other industries. So the industry, rather than correct their problems, would rather you not see them. So they have proposed laws, started in Florida, it's gone to Iowa, and it's now gone to Minnesota, wherein people would be basically considered a felon. And let's just put it where it's at. The bill says it's a felony to be on someone else's property and take photos of what occurs on the property. Initially, the laws prevented even public servants. So Florida amended their law to say that inspectors and federal employees could go on and do this, but the fact is they couldn't stop them anyway. No state can abridge a federal right, and the federal government has essentially occupied this field. And the state of Florida thought it could pass a law barring a federal inspector from inspecting a CAFO. I think they're delusional. So that's a general idea of what the law is about, and we'll get it more specifically. And so, Jim, tell us a little about what's going on in the fight in Iowa over this law.
Well, yeah, in Iowa, the bill was actually introduced by a person who was a formerly with the some kind of an Iowa Beef Council or that sort of thing. She's involved.
Come on, name names. Her name is Annette Sweeney, if I'm not
mistaken. Annette Sweeney, right. It's one of those things that you, when you first hear about it, you think, well, this is absolutely crazy. It can't go anywhere. They're not going to say that it's against the law for somebody to take a picture of somebody violating the law. But as things develop, they materialize, and it actually happens. And as I said, this has passed one house of the Iowa legislature, the House, and by a margin of like 66 to 27. As you mentioned, the unconstitutional aspects having to do with freedom of speech and that sort of thing, they introduced some amendments to that, but they actually contradict themselves and don't really take care of the matter. I've heard that the ACLU actually wants to have the bill passed so that they can sue the state of Iowa. But, you know, in the meantime, who knows? Somebody will probably get thrown in jail for taking pictures of somebody beating a pig.
I want to quote Annette Sweeney, because I think people, because she's the front person, she's fronting this whole thing in your state of Iowa, from what we can see. And Jim Nolan is doing it, who started it for the egg industry down in Florida. And Minnesota is also doing it, as Manny just said. But I'd like to quote what she said so people can see and remember her name, because she can look in the camera and not tell the truth. And I know this for a fact from what I have viewed all week long. So let's start with one step at a time. Sweeney said that the videos aren't just a public relations nightmare for the industry, but they've also sparked bioterrorism fears among farmers. Anybody generally coming onto your place with farm animals and what they might have, a disease on their person. We want to make sure who is coming on and off our property, Sweeney said. Okay, now remember that fact. Same as the other one, but calling people bioterrorists because, you know, what? Anyway. For every one farmer, we feed 155 people, and so it's very important to keep our food source so we can keep feeding the nation. Another lie. She said the videos discredit Iowa farm industry and create biosafety fears among farmers. The problem is with some of those videos that they are staged. They come into a facility and they abuse the animals. The photographers do. And that's what we want to stop. We want to stop animal abuse, said Sweeney. Now, because of this, to make sure that we aren't putting bad information out there, I want to start with the videos, Jim and you guys, if this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
I got volunteered this week since no one wanted to look at this, and Manny kept saying, well, you worked in the emergency room, you've seen the worst, you can go look at these.
I didn't.
Well, he didn't, but I'm exaggerating.
I told her she shouldn't look at them because they're so gross.
I am having nightmares. I started with one state going, okay, let me see what's happening in Texas. It was so brutal that they said, this was only one person, the owner didn't know, nobody knew. Then I went to Wisconsin, New York, Alabama, Iowa. I went to California, and across the world, wherever there is a CAFO, this abuse of animals and caging of animals and the manner in which they're handled and the disease that goes with it is widespread. And for Sweeney to get there and say on TV, looking people, honest to God, in the face with a straight look and saying, this is creating fears among farmers. There should be fears among farmers. There should be fear in humans. Humans should look at these videos because if there's disease and poor quality of taking care of animals, caging up to 11 animals, 11 hens alone in a small area, and the manner in which this is handled, it is not just one video. This is not just one person going in and saying, I'm going to take a picture of this. This is widespread.
I want to just interject for 2 seconds here. You sent me the link to the video, and I'm, both of my computers were tied up. So I thought to myself, self, I'll just ship this to my wife. You know, she can run it on hers. So, you know, forwarded the video link, and I said, can you just whop this on the screen for a moment and, you know, tell me what you think? And about 5 seconds into the video, she said, oh, my God, I can't watch this.
And you know, Simon, my feeling has been with these tapes, because I've seen pictures and I've watched just a second or two so that we knew, you know, for me, so I knew what we were writing. But the truth is...
I want to interject before Ashley gets this. Ashley's worked emergency rooms when she was younger, before she became a model. She worked them in Chicago with gunshot victims and people brought in, even police who've been injured in the course of their job, and it's
children
every...
beaten. I've seen everything. I've seen and worked with. I just cannot believe that another human being would do to another, to an animal, a breathing animal, and the main primary source of our food. Because if you have diseased animals and diseased conditions and poor quality of handling of animals, you're going to have disease. And guess what? We have disease going on like crazy across the world right now. And the one thing she says, too, I'd like to, and Jim, I think this is something you, I'm sure you have can answer. Mm-hmm. It says, for every one farmer, we feed 150, this is Sweeney, 155 people. So it's very important to keep our food source so we can keep feeding the nation. Now, according to the UN, and we stated this report the last time, and I'm going to repeat it again, in March 3, 2003, from Reuters, many farmers in developing nations can double food production within a decade by shifting to ecological agriculture away from the use of chemical fertilizers and pesticides, says the UN. The eco-farming projects in 57 nations have shown an average crop yield gain of 80% by using natural resources. And then there's another study that says that the UN says that going organic, let's see, 144 projects in 24 African countries found yields doubled organic. So they're saying you actually can improve your grain, you can improve animals, you can improve what's being put out there. And one of the things I consistently saw across the country, their male chicks are, when they're doing hens, male chicks are called out right immediately. They are thrown into a trash bin, thrown into a machine, and then processed into food. There's about 250,000 male chicks that are thrown into that bucket every year. How many people, if this were a organic farm, could 240,000 chickens feed? How many animals on that farm? There were dead animals laying everywhere, consistently, across the board. I don't blame Annette Sweeney for not wanting anyone to see. I don't blame her. Because, I mean, you really shouldn't see what I just saw this week. But the fact is, how many animals are dead, laying dead carcasses in Iowa, that people see on a regular basis that's going into our food, but are dead, and many of them can't go into our food because there's new laws. How many, Jim?
Well, as far as a number, I don't know, but there's a couple of things that you mentioned that I will comment on. You mentioned the chickens. it has to do with valuing something, and what this industrial ag production does is it takes away all value from the life of the animal. And what's bad about it is it tends to spread, because the chicken thing was sort of one of the very first areas. There were all these male chickens that they had no use for, because these particular farms raised layers for eggs to satisfy our egg desires. So they destroy the roosters. Well, one of the films that we were talking about today from this week was about calves in Texas. And these were male calves and they were the male calves who were born on a dairy farm. Well, if you've got a dairy farm, of course, it's the females that produce the milk, so you really have no value in the bull calves. So it's a nuisance. You want to get rid of them. So they got rid of them in an extremely brutal manner in this video. So we've gone from, you know, this little one-ounce chick that really has financially very little value
in that
grows up
into
a rooster,
farm, right?
And then you move to a calf, and you move on and on. So it's the progression thing. You know, like they used to talk about when we were kids with the stepping stone drug. You know, if we smoked a joint, we were going to end up crackheads. Well, that's not always true, and it's not always true with the analogy we're talking about food production, but it definitely happens. And I've seen this in individuals. Farmers used to have a real relationship with the animals that they raised. My dad had usually about a peak 20 cows that he milked. Francis, who we've mentioned a couple times, milks about 80 to 100 cows. You develop a relationship. You know individual animals. When you've got a hog farm and you've got 8,000 pigs and they're only there for several months and then another 8,000 come in, you don't have any kind of relationship with them. It just becomes a pig is about the same as a corn stalk. And that whole connection that people have when they think about the food that they get, the noble farmer has been driven away by corporate interests. And, you know, the statement that is bragged about, the small number of farmers that feed our country and feed the world, they use that as a positive thing, and it's really a negative thing. If we were to go back and more people were involved in food production, we would get rid of some of these bad things. And then people say, well, nobody wants to do that hard work. So people will do the hard work. They need to be paid for it. So much of the work that's done now in agriculture is done by minimum wage, sometimes lower than that, because some of the workers can be coerced into working for less than minimum wage and not reporting worker violations. It's this whole circle of always narrowing the money to a smaller amount of people.
Well, from a sociological standpoint, Jim, to me this is also somewhat of an attempt of business to return to almost a feudal system where they control the ownership of the land, and in controlling the ownership of the land, they basically reduce the owner to really nothing more than a serf. So many of these people who are locked into dealing with corporate America are now no longer have a choice in any way that they lead their life.
That's right. Simon and I talked a little bit about socioeconomic aspects of rural America with the industrialization of agriculture, and it's not just agriculture, it's other things. I've read several stories lately about how small town, rural Iowa, Illinois, they're having trouble finding people to be city council members, mayors, that sort of thing. There's nobody in the town that wants to run for election to take care of the civic needs of small communities. Well, part of the reason for that is if you had a town of 1,000 people 50 years ago, you had a number of merchant owners, people who owned their business, the elevator owner, a couple of gas station operators, a mechanic, all these things that owned their business. Now, rural America and towns of under 1,000 people, it tends to be nothing but lower-level employed people, hourly wage people, and oftentimes even rural America has become a welfare area. People who aren't employed and don't have any work, it's the cheapest place they can live. They can get the cheapest housing. And so they move to rural America as an economic measure. And those people are not interested in the civic aspects. And so it's this continual downward spin for rural America. My mother always told me when I was a little boy, if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. And we can't really move back, but when I see the life that I grew up in rural Minnesota and how that is gone, it's just astounding to see in 50 years how much life has changed.
Yeah, I agree. And when you take a look at this bigger picture, I believe somewhere in one of our blogs in the last couple of weeks, we listed some statistics. And the bottom line is that if you take by sheer numbers of cattle in the state of Iowa and farming, probably 90% are owned by non-residents who aren't living there. And in the case of these major corporations, probably most of them have never bothered to even step foot in Iowa unless they've been forced to. I don't see a corporate office or a major corporation showing up in the field unless there's some reason to. They basically delegate that to others. So
yeah.
Here you have an absentee ownership run by corporations who don't even show up on the land.
It's not, you used the term cattle, and usually cattle is interpreted with farm people to beef, and it's not quite as bad with beef, but pork is very definitely that way. And some of the people of Farm Bureau, they talk about Iowa's family farmers, and they use that as a term that sounds good, but frequently what the common person, if you would think about what they mean by a family farmer, it's far from the truth. Now, one of the main pork owners in this part of Iowa is Christensen Family Farms. Just sounds nice, doesn't it? Nice little.
Oh, it sounds beautiful.
Well, Christensen Family Farms are actually headquartered in, I think it's Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. And it's a family, but they have nothing to do with Iowa. They own thousands and thousands and thousands of pigs down here in Iowa. But that's Christensen Family Farms. And if you want to go to the real extreme, one of our favorite companies, Cargill. Cargill is pretty basically owned by one family.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So, getting back to this specific whistleblower bill, they meaning the corporate powers, work from every single direction. So at the same time that we've got this movement to shut down individuals, activists, as they like to refer to us, I'm sure you guys have all been called activists.
Wait a minute, wait, that'd be a step up for us.
I like it. This week alone.
thank you for making it sound
far too kind.
But anyhow, at the same time that they've got the bills for that, we also have in Iowa a House study bill and a Senate study bill to defund the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. That's the agency that has, through the last 20 or 30 years, been responsible for enforcement of environmental pollution on farms in Iowa. They're trying to defund them. They're trying to take away some of the responsibilities from the DNR and put them into the Department of Agriculture, which we have now changed to Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, IDALS. And that agency, by the Iowa Constitution, is responsible to promote the ag industry. Well, if you've got an agency that their constitutional duty is to promote an industry, can they be policing that industry at the same time? Of course they can't. So they're taking funds away from the enforcement agency, sending over to another agency, shutting down individuals. And here's another thing. House File 500 strips the Environmental Protection Commission. That's a citizen-appointed board that works with the Department of Natural Resources. They want to strip them of their rulemaking authority and put it all in the hands of the DNR director. So rather than having a citizen board that's appointed and has changed, they want to centralize it all in one person.
And let me learn something here, too. Jim, you're forgetting that the Tea Party movement would like to eliminate the EPA altogether, which would effectively mean that everything would go uncontrolled, ungoverned.
Oh, it's terrible.
And they're already underfunded. There's no way that they can keep up on the inspections. Now, looking specifically at Iowa again, and Francis would have a little bit more information on this, and I kick Francis a little bit here. Where is he? But
Francis left you hanging again.
Francis ran for Secretary of Agriculture in Iowa's election last fall and ran a very good race, but did not come out victorious.
He should have. Oh, my gosh, his farm is beautiful.
Yeah. During the campaign was when they had the massive egg recall in Iowa. I think it was like 200 million eggs or something like that.
Well, no, it was between Wright County and Hillendale. It was 550 million eggs.
But they reduced the number to 340 million, and I think it's because they allowed eggs to be recycled into the baked goods.
Oh, yeah, they cooked them to kill the salmonella, so it was safe for us. So during that campaign time, Francis implored the standing Secretary of Agriculture to look into this situation. And he said, oh, well, that's really beyond the realm of the Department of Agriculture. We'll leave that to other agencies. So here Iowa Agriculture gets a temporary black eye. Again, as we talked at the start of the show, maybe that was before we were even on the air. People forget about these things that happen quickly. Back last July, people were concerned about the egg recall, but now people think, oh, there's my eggs. They're 80 cents a dozen. It's a nice, cheap price. We have cheap food here.
Well,
DNR refused to do that inspection, and now they want DNR to do it when he's already said he wouldn't.
Wait a minute, Jim. Let me ask you a question. You know who the DeCoster family is, correct?
Yes, yes.
Do you feel their political pull in Iowa in some way affected the Iowa government from taking any stand whatsoever on them?
DeCoster has such a bad name in Iowa now that I think politicians tend to stay away from him. But what DeCoster is smart about is filtering his money through different ways that people don't know that it's him. In fact, this was part of the problem. He had been forbidden from having various different business practices in Iowa, agricultural things, for a certain number of years because of things that he did. And when the time period was up, there were several companies that immediately got turned right back to him. So really, they were under DeCoster's control the whole time.
What a shock.
Okay, can I interject with a really stupid question, because I'm really good at them. Who the hell is this DeCoster guy?
Manny, it sounds like you're familiar with him. I know some things, but you might be able to describe him to Simon a little bit better and more accurately, and I'll just throw in a little aside.
Funny, I was going to punt it to you.
Well, okay, I'll start.
Saying a word.
I'll start.
See, my wife has abandoned me, too.
That's right.
I'm not as current on him as I once was because I haven't written any articles about him since, I think, last summer, but he is basically a power player who's very active in the Republican Party and runs with all the other people, including Jim Norman and all the people in Florida, and the rest of it is he's basically a financier. And he and his family basically are in the factory farm business, and they try to keep as low a profile as possible in recent years. And none of us know as much about him as we'd like, except we've been able to trace their campaign contributions. And up until about a year and a half ago, they were still making major contributions to members of the government in Iowa. They have not really slowed down at all. And I'm not sure that anybody in Iowa cares as much as you do, as you say they do, or they probably would have taken some action to curb his activities long ago. And what happens to me, and this is more my experience as a lawyer, when you make political contributions, it's one thing when you make them in the United States government. You've got major newspapers looking at over your shoulder. There's concerns about who's going to see it. People get more cautious. They're afraid of the Washington Post, all this. But when you get into a smaller state like yours, the press is not as open, and they're not as, I don't want to use rude, parochial worldwide, but they certainly have more local interests and are more affected by what goes on. The same can be said of political contributions. A political contribution in the state of Iowa in smaller districts, for example, where Annette Sweeney ran for office as a councilwoman, has much more effect than it does on the larger national scale because of those reasons. So as a result, DeCoster has really gone unchecked. I don't know if anyone doing very much about him.
No, and he, as I say, for a short time, he was kind of subdued by some rules that were put in place because of what he did here in Iowa. But
what
he
exactly
is,
did he do?
Well, he had hog confinements originally, and so when this chicken thing came up, that was kind of a surprise. But he had some things with the Packers that he did illegal bargaining with them and shut out some other people. He had hog confinements that were breaking environmental rules severely, and as I said, he was penalized so that he could not take part in hog raising in Iowa for, I think it was 5 years. But it turned out that he had new companies started, and it was his son that was doing it. And as soon as the 5 years were over, then his son turned it back over to his father. And his son was just a lackey for him. And then in the meantime, he had gotten into the egg business. And it's not just in Iowa, as he mentioned. I think he actually lives in Pennsylvania or somewhere in the east now. But he's kind of infiltrated a number of different agriculture businesses. And the egg situation, he owned one company and had an interest in another. It's, you know, kind of this corporate things where a company spins off, but they still have 40% of the stock from the second company.
Yeah,
well, obviously,
they need sufficient amount of stock to maintain control for management purposes and also for tax purposes, so they can declare on their tax return they're a wholly owned subsidiary and reduce double taxation to the government. And that's the major motivation for some of this playing around.
Yeah. Just like I said, I can kind of spread the story, but you can make it correct.
Yeah, well, you can correct me on farming when it gets to the Constitution. I'll do my part, okay?
So, getting back to this thing with the law that's they're trying to pass it, where it's going to be a felony or even just a misdemeanor. Just, you know, so what? So what, right, Manny?
Well, no. Well, first of all, let's understand that. I think I pointed it out before. The classic definition of a misdemeanor is a crime that has to be witnessed by a law enforcement officer in order to write a ticket or any type of citation. And they use that word because citation is the appropriate word as opposed to some other form of, let's say, indictment. You can't indict somebody on a misdemeanor. By making it a felony, it allows them to chase down whoever it is that's done whatever it is they believe they've done, and then prosecute them by indictment or having a prosecutor in a state, which is, bothers me, particularly about a small state like Iowa that can be influenced, where that prosecutor would then either bring a bill of under what depends on what the state is, or submit it to a grand jury, or just simply issue an indictment. So let's say that it's a reporter, even a French reporter, you know, much like WikiLeaks, who's not an American. And he basically takes a photo and publishes it somewhere in a European magazine. Conceivably, the prosecutor in Iowa could indict him and ask for extradition, much the same way the United States is trying to extradite the WikiLeaks founders. So this law gives them once again
Julian Assange.
I know, Julian. I didn't want to go into his name, but to make a long story short, I don't want it to be about him. What it's about is that it allows people to exercise laws that would not ordinarily be exercised by having this additional power. And that's really frightening, because in this country right now, we've all seen abuses throughout the years. Look at Richard Nixon's political hit list. I mean, and we could have another president. I personally felt that even George Bush had a tendency to do that. If you didn't agree with him, you became on his list, and that's just the way it was.
Well, that's kind of what Sweeney's doing here, isn't it? By calling it, she's that anybody who's basically not agreeing with this horrible practice of what I've seen this week in these factory farms are sparking bioterrorism fears among farmers. So actually they want the next law, if they pass this one, they could actually start accusing, couldn't we go to Guantanamo? Bioterrorists, right?
Well, my favorite is people don't realize that...
Or eco-terrorists, too. That's the other
right.
one they use.
Oh, yes. But people don't realize Monsanto, for example, was successful in having MSG, not only Monsanto, but the rest of the industry. Monsanto's really not a player, and I want to apologize to them. They do enough on their own. Basically... took MSG and put it in the Bioterrorism Act. So I guess transporting air MSG, if you mess with a truck, you've committed bioterrorism, and conceivably someone who spray-painted a Monsanto, or excuse me, not Monsanto, but a truck full of MSG being transported at a truck stop could be prosecuted for basically bioterrorism. I mean, this is the way that we're going, is corporations by politicians by making contributions. Sounds like the 1800s, doesn't it? The carpetbagger period. And basically what they do then is they get the laws passed to protect them and say the heck with you. And in fact, there's a specialized word in constitutional law called company-owned stores. And those are companies who take over a town, dominate it, own the department store, and own every aspect of the business politically, determine every law, and determine how every law is enforced. Those small town sheriff stories that we run around.
But Manny, there's the federal law. You were explaining how the federal law right now says they want people to be whistleblowers. It's to protect other people. If you see something bad happening in your company or abuse, they have permitted this, where you can take a photo, because everyone's going to deny it. That seems to be the routine with, like, Annette Sweeney and anybody I saw in videos. Let's take it off Annette and go back to the videos where the owner was actually caught. The owner would say, I knew nothing about it. And at one video actually started crying, I knew nothing about it, while he's caught on tape doing atrocities. And subsequently, isn't it federal law protected from the state? I'm confused on that.
Okay. Well, for those people who took high school government, you learn that the federal government's laws preempt the state laws. The most classic situation is controversy in Arizona, where they passed the immigration laws. Every lawyer looked at it and laughed, because every lawyer will tell you a state cannot pass a law that abridges the federal immigration law. So what a shock. The government's already stricken it down, and it will basically go away. I thought it was a great public relations move by the state of Arizona to compel the federal government to come to the table and discuss immigration issues. And so people don't misunderstand me. I was born and raised Los Angeles, where we have advocated for 50 to 60 years putting up a wall between California and Mexico, where everybody who grew up here predicted what would happen today: illegal aliens, drug traffic. And that's the least of it. There are manufacturers of defense products in the United States, who I'll leave nameless because of a whistleblower case I was involved in, that actually have parts for...
Involved in as a judge, right?
I was the lawyer in the case, not the judge. And to make a long story short, parts that go into American defense things, airplanes, for example, fighter planes, were being made in Mexico and basically smuggled to their plant in the United States. And everybody just went wink, wink when the trucks went by. In fact, they even brought labor in from Mexico, cheap labor. And because they are such a large corporation in the United States, everybody turned their head. And these are the issues in California and Arizona that upset all of us so much. So, and I don't want to in any way inflame anyone in the Latino population, which I'm close to and really enjoy a great deal. And my Latino friends in Los Angeles, born and raised in the United States, even sons of immigrants, have sympathy for this, but they have sympathy because the Mexican government has left these people so financially devastated. The Mexican government is exporting their poor to the United States rather than provide jobs and provide them a decent life there. But that's not fair that Americans pay for the social welfare of America, of Mexican citizens, because the Mexican government wouldn't. So here we have the same kind of situation. We have states going, we don't want to be inspected. Well, look what happened with the Bush administration. They broke down, fired, and got rid of everybody in the FDA and the USDA that were liberal, that supported enforcement, and they rendered it almost impotent. And then we had all of a sudden peanut butter and other things that were causing.
They kicked the scientists out. A lot of scientists were kicked
out.
Right.
And so we have a salmonella problem. And if you remember, the FDA couldn't even find the source. It kept blaming it on Mexican lettuce because it didn't want to tell the truth. It was a problem in the United States. And they had to call the CDC in, and the CDC discovered it was the peanut butter manufacturers. I believe it was in Atlanta, Georgia, and, of course, the one out in Texas. So the end result is an already impotent FDA and USDA and an already impotent EPA caused by Republican administrations now are in a position where the fringe of the Republican Party, the Tea Party, now want to eliminate all these areas that protect Americans. So what will happen if we wiped all these out in 3 years from now, we had a massive salmonella or E. coli breakout in the United States and absolutely no government agencies that handle this? And that's the erosion, Jim, that I think you're talking about.
And,
yes.
And Manny, again, though, wait 1 second before we go to Jim. You're saying that because the whistleblower law is in the government right now, in D.C., approved, that the state cannot preempt this. They can't kick it out and say, okay, we're the state. I don't understand it.
Okay, well, let's make it simple. There are many different federal whistleblowers laws. They include the False Claims Act, which is one you see in the news all the time, where, in fact, some citizen was just awarded $5 million for turning in a major corporation that hid millions of dollars from taxes. There's the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, that's referred to as SOX, which is whistleblowers for politicians and all sorts of other things. You have the Dodd-Frank Act, which is another one. So basically, I think the government has received more than $27 billion of money that was diverted from the federal government either through fraudulent acts, tax, or otherwise. It's since 1986. That's a period, really, of 25 years. So we're averaging over $1 billion in recovery from these kind of frauds. So if you get rid of whistleblowing, then you can't recover the money. So basically they're saying if you come and take a picture of an animal being used in Iowa and you personally publish it and provide it to the USDA and at least you being prosecuted, that company could demand that reporter or individual who took the photo be prosecuted for a felony, and unless they amend and change some of these laws, the sentences go from 10 years to life. And so the end result is, do we have an interest in our society of protecting these special interest companies, they're basically robber barons, much like Rockefeller and the rest of them were in the 80s, or do we want to protect the public from them and their overreaching and their lack of interest in the welfare of our country? And one of the things required by the 14th Amendment to apply these laws is what's called a compelling state interest. The state must have a compelling state interest in protecting an industry or a right to abridge a First Amendment right of free speech and free press. So I point out in the article, the classic one is yelling fire in a crowded theater in the dark. That you don't have a constitutional right to cause a riot like that. There are other things, syndicalism, which is defined as standing crowd going at a rally for the President of the United States, whatever your political affiliation is, and demanding kill him and trying to incite the right to kill the President. We have no interest in our country of people doing that. So tell me, what interest does the state of Iowa have in protecting Wright County Farm, who put out millions of bad eggs, Annette Sweeney's farm, if she were in fact abusing animals, and which makes me wonder whether she is because she's so adamant.
And when no one's allowed to see her farm.
Right.
I mean, if you're – like Francis has no trouble, obviously, because he took videos, and you could see the tremendous – in fact, before meeting him on this show, I saw his video, and And I knew how much he loved his animal, and the animal loved him. And consequently, he's going to care about how that milk is produced and how the cheese is produced and how the yogurt is produced. This is somebody, just by looking at how he treats that animal, you're going to know. And the difference was day and night on his agricultural farm.
To answer your question, Manny, what overriding interest does the state have? In the words of our governor, Terry Branstad, his responsibility is economic development. And anything that government does to stand in the way of economic development is bad. He had a series of meetings around the state asking people to come and tell him and his followers, his legislators, and come and tell us about government regulations that are interfering with your ability to do business and make a profit. They had about 15 or 20 meetings around the state. My thought always was that the purpose of the government is to protect and serve the people, not to guarantee a profit for business. But that is the stand that Iowa governmental leadership has right now, is that the government's purpose is to stimulate the economy and guarantee a profit for business.
Yes,
so that's where we stand.
Right. And that, by the way, is becoming the Republican mantra and the Tea Party mantra. And my only complaint, I agree with the Tea Party in many areas, but I don't agree with them on the issue of deregulation. Right now, businesses in the United States have not proved that they deserve the right to have areas that are basically deregulated so they can benefit. Their history has really shown quite the contrary. If anything, we probably would benefit by more, not less.
And, you know, you mentioned robber barons before, and the comparison is real good, but the one thing about robber barons, they were individuals. And if you look at Carnegie and some of the others, after a lifetime of raping American people and amassing huge amounts of money, at the end of their life, they finally decided, you know, this really wasn't so good. I'm going to give my money back. And they did that. But you're never going to find that with a corporation, because a corporation has no conscience.
They have sociopathic personalities.
What's that?
It's sociopathic personalities.
Yeah.
They're malignant narcissists who are sociopaths who have no feeling for anyone. It's all about the money.
Right.
As long as they're making money, that's what's important to them.
Getting back to the law again, too, the whistleblower law in Iowa, it is not just for the person who takes the picture. If someone later publishes that picture. So, for example, if I went and took a video of someone clubbing hogs with hammers and you posted that video on your website, you would be liable under the terms of that law. Also.
Yes, I was coming back to that. Let's pursue that for a moment. That brings in my other, why I brought up freedom of the press. Can you imagine the New York Times publishing that and them pursuing the New York Times for publishing it? And I think I pointed out in one of my articles that even though the United States government would like to basically extradite Julian Assange and the founder of WikiLeaks, I don't see them bringing an action against the L.A. Times or the New York Times. And I would go back to a more important issue, the Pentagon Papers and Daniel Ellsberg. When he published those about Vietnam, I don't see one newspaper being prosecuted for publishing them. And that attempt to punish newspapers or websites in itself is a violation of the First Amendment and the right to freedom of the press. And that's the kind of overreaching that a corporation's willing to make, because what they hope to do is pass the law, have it enforced while it goes up to the Supreme Court, and they get 5, 6, 7 years of peace because the law is being enforced, or it frightens people into avoiding the consequences of the law. And so at the end of the day, they get the same result, don't they?
Yep.
And the word
Jim,
is...
Jim, I want to go back and ask a really, well, another one of my really dumb questions.
This number two
this,
for today, then. Although I didn't think the other one was...
Maybe,
I don't
maybe
think the other one was particularly dumb. It's self-labeled.
the bill that is meandering its way through... the Iowa government, is it specifically about taking photographs on CAFOs, or is it a more far-reaching bill? And the reason I ask that is that there was a lot of controversy when Google started up a service called Street View.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they basically published pictures of streets. In fact, my house is on there. I think Manny's house is on there.
Yeah, and I always note they in my neighborhood, they took the picture. I can tell when they took it because I know when I remodel the house, and I look at it and go, oh, the house wasn't remodeled. So you know,
right.
you sort of develop a sense of humor about it, if there's such thing as a sense of humor.
Right, but, yeah, but, you know, to me, Google Street View is just fine. Is the Iowa bill specifically about CAFOs, or... is it about taking photographs on any private property?
Oh, you should be in the Iowa legislature because you brought up a question that they dealt with. First of all, specifically, the bill is aimed at agriculture. So it doesn't have anything to do. You can still go up and take a picture of a factory putting raw sewage into a river or of a... or heaven forbid, a real estate developer who doesn't put up enough of the cloth to keep a little bit of the dirt from running down the shoulder. One of our members on JFAN is a real estate developer, and he tells us about all the things that they have to do, which is good, when they develop real estate, and how all of those things for agriculture don't exist. They can do pretty much anything they want to. But anyhow, the bill is specifically limited to agriculture, but you asked about Google. They have exempted Google specifically in the bill.
Yeah, they did.
They have that in there. Yep.
They've exempted Google in the bill.
why did they do that? Because a lawyer said to them, guys, you can't do that. You're really exceeding the bounds here. And that's simply reason enough for the legislature the courts to knock that down. So what they've tried to do is refashion the bill to, in some strange way, to make it constitutional. But, you know, it's kind of like the old nursery rhyme. How many kings, you know, all the king's men and all can't put together this law to make it work. And that's the bottom line.
Oh, I hope not. Because if people aren't aware of what's happening to their food and their food source, I want to get back to that because it's really, nutrition is a source of, people can get very, very sick and are getting very, very sick because of the food sources. And I think people need to really focus in on where their food's coming from. And I guess hiding the pictures makes it not happen, right, Manny? It doesn't exist if you can't see the pictures.
Well, yeah.
Ashley, you said early on, citing something that Annette Sweeney talked about, bioterrorism and the poor CAFO operators having to worry about some photographer who's infected with some disease that his hogs are going to get. It's bizarre because the soil and the water close to CAFOs has been measured in various different university tests and found to contain all this antibiotic
antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And yet they're saying that somebody can't come in and take a picture. And this is one of the things when the CAFO operators, if you say, well, we want to see how wonderful your thing is, oh, well, you can't come in here. You might give our hogs the flu or something like that. And they claim that they're in there with these outfits that they only wear when they're in the barn, and they wear masks on their face and all this sort of thing. When out of the CAFO is spewing bacteria that is resistant to antibiotics.
There's two things that...
By the way, I in one of our blogs I said, if you believe that, I have a bridge for you in New York I'd like to sell. I mean, that is the most absurd.
It's so absurd.
Argument.
It's just, and the fact that this woman, I hope everybody remembers and takes down the people in Iowa, the 69 people who are pushing it through your House and Senate, and remember their name when they come back up for voting. Because anybody who can look into the camera and lie or make up this whatever ridiculous thing, it's all staged, really? All that I looked at this week was staged, you know? At any rate, that's just so, the whole thing is absurd. Remember their names, because they don't care about the people. They are about corporations and the money.
Not just that, Ashley, but people need to remember, this isn't just people in Iowa, Florida, and Minnesota. This is all over. And the corporate ag people took note and saw when California passed the law about, I think it was... farrowing pens for hogs and the veal cages and that sort of thing, and then there were some laws passed in Ohio. That information spread through the corporate agriculture web just like wildfire. My little Farm Bureau newspaper that we get here in Iowa had stories about it, and they right away started talking about what to do to counteract those few little minimal things that were done to protect the animals and working against it. So pretty much we just sit back and say, well, what can we do?
And getting to the veal, I think that is one of the things that they have to be upset with. Sunette Sweeney and Jim Nolan and these people have to be upset about. The USDA in February 12, 2011, under President Barack Obama, did pass a law that... they decided to ban the slaughter of disabled calves for veal production. This is to prevent four people. If these photos didn't exist and this tape didn't exist in Vermont, which it does, this is to prevent the use of sick animals that may carry disease, such as your mad cow disease, which takes 8 to 15 years to show up in people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact that this disease... if those people didn't go in and catch that in Vermont and show what was happening to these sick calves that were falling over, that were diseased, that had sores, that were, you know, they weren't able to hammer them yet, I guess. So that's what was going into the veal that was being made for that expensive veal dinner someone was eating. They were buying a future disease. And the president stepped in and said, under the USD under him, said no. So I think that's part of it. If this Vermont video to protect people didn't exist, do you think those people in Vermont would show what was happening on that farm?
Of course not. In fact, that's one of the biggest dangers I think that Iowa has is the public embarrassment. Iowa is a very proud state from my watching of the events in your state. And for them to become the laughing stock of this country over some kind of bill like this is not something I think the average person in Iowa really looks forward to. And if that's exactly what's going to happen to them, because I can assure you, they may not care what people in California say, but everyone I know is laughing about this, like, oh, yeah, I thought Iowa was so erudite. That's what a friend of mine said the other day when I asked him if he read the article. He started laughing and said, you know, Iowa's just gone to pot. And he's someone who grew up in the Midwest. And all he could do was laugh. And
that's interesting, Manny, because we had our redistricting approved from the census, and we lost our congressional seat. And they did an amazing job. We've got four congressional seats, and the population difference from the largest district to the smallest district is like 240 votes or something. So there's this great pride about how Iowa's system works. We're able to do this wonderful redistricting. But at the same time, we're putting in these absolutely crazy, laughable, dangerous things on our food supply. And Iowa's supposed to be, you know, the feeds the nation. And all we're doing is passing laws to endanger the quality of the food that Iowa's putting out.
Yes, I agree. And that's what bothers me about it, is that so many states are working in this direction. And in its own way, it's a rebellion against the union, is they don't want to live by federal law, which again brings up to some of the dissident groups throughout our country politically. Part of what's going on in this movement is they don't want to live by federal law. And at times it reminds me a great deal of all the reasons why the South seceded from the North. And it's not lost upon me that a great deal of the Tea Party do function in that arena. So here we are with a group that is passing an agenda that sounds vaguely familiar with what went on between the 1830s and 1861 and the start of the Civil War, because the policies are not policies that represented our entire country. So what are we going to do, let Florida secede from the Union because it doesn't want to follow the law that everyone else does? And that's really some of the issues that we're facing.
One of the things I wanted to talk about, Jim, something you said, was about the disease, because in going through these videos across the country of how CAFOs are run, it's easy to understand how the disease is passed. And I think maybe people understand the concern and why and how they are going to get disease and are getting disease, maybe then there may be a better understanding of why these photographs need to be taken. Because if this is happening and this is what's happening within your meal, you need to know it. And the one thing is, when animals are in cramped quarters, someone may go, oh, well, so what? You know, so what? It's going to become my steak. Well, this is what happens, though. You have, like, say, the swine flu. You have hundreds of thousands of, you have all these pigs in the same area. And they then have ammonia, and they're in ammonia because they're in the hydrogen sulfide and ammonia, which irritates their lung. The lungs become irritated. Then they get respiratory problems. The respiratory problems, also their immune system gets down. This is within the animal. The animal's immune system goes down, then they're going to have droplets that go from respiratory to respiratory. And that's how swine flu is going from person to person. And it all starts from the excrement, the crowded conditions. Then in other animals, you have animals rubbing against cages. They have sores. They're beating their beaks. They're beating their wings. They can't move. You see the intestines coming out. I mean, you see horrible things that are infections within the animals. And the result is then, of course, then they got to give lots of antibiotics. The antibiotics then become resistant to the E. coli. Again, you're back with the manure and the things that they're in constantly. And there's a gene passing of the responsibility of the antibiotic resistance from the bacteria of your E. coli, such as staph. So there's this horizontal, what they call gene transfer, that the E. coli then is transferring itself into these other genes that then become infection. It's a cycle that happens as long as there's CAFOs and confinement. It's just like crowding a lot of people in an elevator, and you have a lot of sick people with sores and a lot of sick people with a flu, and people start peeing in the elevator, and you got a lot of ammonia, and this ammonia gets up in the air, and if somebody else starts sneezing, you're going to get a virus. That virus is right there. That's what's happening in the CAFO. You confine them, that's what you're going to get.
And then draw an analogy. The door opens to the elevator. Everybody walks to their desk, and everybody who's sitting in that office has no clue what has been brought into their office with them because they didn't see what was going on in the elevator.
And it's now soaked into these people. It's soaked into their skin, so you can't see it. So it must be okay because you can't see it.
You know,
and I think we'll agree, Simon, that it, and I'm sure you'll agree too, that if you were sitting in that office and you saw we're going in the elevator, you'd say to your the person working with you, "Get out of here, dude! You know, don't get near me."
You're right.
And that's,
but now, wait a minute.
Okay.
They're not even asking you to eat your fellow worker. Okay.
So there describes a capo right there.
Right. So they're basically asking you to eat what's going on locked in that elevator, and if someone took a picture of it, he'd go to jail.
Oh, but because there's no testing in that elevator, because God forbid we test it, because then you know how sick it is, then it can't exist. And that actually, by the way, is how the pandemic flu that killed millions across the country and the world in 1918, that's how that happened. One went to another, went to another, went to another, and you had the swine flu going across. And that, of course, is what Annette Sweeney's saying. They don't want Sears and the farmers because, A, you know, they may know the truth about that elevator. So that sums it up, Manny.
Well, I have this great plan. Okay, Manny, Ashley, Jim, what we do is rent a nondescript vehicle, and we take a quick trip to Walmart, get a can of spray paint, and write Google on the side. Put a tripod, we can just duct tape it to the roof. I'm pretty certain I have a Kodak Brownie somewhere. We can stick that on the top of the tripod, and we can go take pictures of the CAFOs.
And that would be okay.
That would be okay. I'm confused by that.
Well, Google's exempt.
Yeah, I know.
You know, Manny, one of the problems with that, I have a friend, as I mentioned to you yesterday, I was coming back from Minneapolis. A friend of mine from Minneapolis that comes down here to bucolic Iowa, and he's been coming down here for about 40 years now. And when he first started coming down here, he always talked about all the hogs he saw out in the farms running around, rooting in the dirt. You know, there are pigs all over. When you drive through Iowa now, you don't see any pigs. Tell someone, yeah, Iowa leads the country in pork production. And people would say, well, where are they? And where they are is inside of buildings, metal buildings that look like a warehouse in Las Vegas or any of those other towns that are famous for warehouses. They're just big, long, huge metal buildings, nondescript, white, and they've got these little canvas things on the side, and they've got big fans on them. So your little car with the Google thing, you might be able to take a picture of the building, but what goes on inside, you don't see, and that's where all the problem is what's inside.
And therein gets to why they're passing this law, is the only way to really blow the whistle on their activities is to be able to get on the premises and see what they're doing.
I mean, does that mean that Food Inc. can get yanked? Food Inc. isn't there. Those people can go. The Oscar-winning film can go to. Those people can go to jail.
It was Oscar-nominated, and that's possible too.
I don't know that they've had a provision in the bill to make it retroactive. But as crazy as the rest of it is, maybe they do.
Yeah, because they'd be showing it. It's being seen.
Well, without going to the topic of retroactive, Food Inc. isn't going to be the last one ever made. So you can be assured that there's somewhere out there is another documentary maker who feels that that Food Inc. for some reason hasn't covered the entire show. Therefore, we're going to supplement it and do more. And so there will be other ones. We all know that.
You know, we've only got a few minutes left. We need to talk about something on this. We've been talking 80 minutes now about how bad this is, but we need to talk about what can be done to change it. And probably one of the most immediate things, and yes, it makes food more expensive, but we have the cheapest food in the world. That's what our corporate agriculture continually reminds us, is we have that cheap food if you don't consider all the costs. We need to look at local food. We've talked about some of the recalls, the hundreds of millions of eggs last summer, the spinach thing. And part of the big problem with it is that the food supply, when these things get into it, is so huge that identifying where it comes from is very difficult. If you eat local food and you're eating meat from a small processor or you're eating vegetables from a local grower and you get sick, you know right where it came from, and it's not affecting thousands and millions of people. And that's one of the keys. We really need to get back to more locally grown food.
Yes, that's something that Francis has pointed out a couple of times to me. And one of the aspects of that is, as he pointed out, that in an olden day, if you had a salmonella problem or outbreak, you could pretty well confine it to the area because it was local food and figure it out. Now so much has moved around. The hogs are moved. The food is shipped all over. Whenever there's an outbreak, massive amounts of foods have to be recalled because nobody has a clue where that food is gone. And I think that one of the reasons that we push our position on more labeling is we believe that somewhere in there, labels have to be directed towards more than just codes. I want to see identifiable codes so people can look at them and know where that food came from.
I'd love to know where the farms are. I want to know what farm. Like I buy specific from specific farms at the farmer's market. I go when I'm at Whole Foods. It's locally grown sections that I go to that are organic. And the first time I looked at the farm, I went and looked it up. Beautiful farm. And I know I can trust the food because I know they care about the food. So therefore, they're going to care about me.
You know, and something that occurred to me, Jim, when you talk about this, and again, we're back to the negative side, which is part of the positive. You know, I think people in Iowa need to understand that if they pass this law, there is a possibility that people around this country will boycott food from Iowa because of it. And they need to, you know, take the blinders off and realize that Americans want more truth in their foods, and there's a growing food revolution. And those people in the food revolution look at this kind of conduct and go, well, if...
What are they hiding?
Yeah, what's Iowa hiding that they have to pass this law? And I don't think that people in Iowa think that other people in the United States open their eyes and see the truth about what's going on. And I think that's a fatal flaw right now in the position.
Well, it seems to me that there is something fundamentally wrong with the whole system. I mean, if, you know, CAFO and GMO stuff is so good for us, why hasn't someone come up with the great marketing ploy of plastering made only with the finest CAFO and GMO products on their label?
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, I agree. Because I want to know how many antibiotics I'm getting, especially knowing the antibiotic. Again, I'm going to repeat this because this is really key, Jim, and this is key to the listeners. Antibiotic-resistant E. coli, which everyone's afraid of and is aware of, the bad E. coli, may also pass on its gene responsible for antibiotic resistance to other species of bacteria, such as Staphylococcus. People want to know where it's coming from. I want to know if this is from a CAFO that is confined to get in that elevator, all these animals that have to have antibiotics in order to keep them from being sick. I need to know that. I need to know, am I going to become resistant because of all of their bad actions?
Yeah. And I have a call out to Annette Sweeney, who's at the heart of this. If your farm is so wonderful to look at and your cattle and your livestock, depending on what you have, is so wonderful, why are you afraid to let anybody see it? If Iowa farmers who are into this style of farming are so proud of what they do, why do they hide it?
Oh, they're starting a new one, though. I don't know if you guys have seen this or not. It's kind of like Sugar is Sugar from Conair, where they do these beautiful things even though and ignore the test. Well, now they've got brand new videos out to counter the ones that have been taken to protect people. And there are these beautiful farms taken from this. So you can walk in and see, I have 10 chickens on my capo. See all this land they have inside my confined barn? I mean, latest one I've seen, and I'm just going, do they really expect us to buy this?
Yeah, you know, I use the example of that old joke about the guy's wife who catches him with a girlfriend in his bed, and she goes, "Who's that woman in your bed?" And he goes, "What woman?" And that's sort of where our CAFO people are right now. Every time you say something like this, their response is, "I don't see anything. There's no dead animals. You just don't see it. It doesn't exist."
Talking about videos, I have to tell you about this one video that was not put out by any scare group, no PETA, no activist. This was a marketing video by a Dutch company, and the product was a composting machine. And it showed this machine, and they took like three or four big garbage dumpsters of dead hogs, dumped it into this machine, and then dumped in dry sawdust. And this thing churns and spins, and in 2 days, they show the final product, which is potting soil. And it, you know, in this time, it heats it, and it turns these dead pigs and sawdust into beautiful soil. It's not available anymore. I tried to get it, and it's gone. But this was done as a marketing thing for hog CAFOs. What to do with your dead pigs?
So they're taking the diseased animal filled with antibiotics and lots of E. coli and pus and everything else that they're sick with, because that's why they died, and infections. And then they're composting that. It's going to become the soil, and then fertilizing that land with that CAFO-filled pussy manure. And now that's going to be used. Gee, I wonder why there's salmonella and E. coli recalls on vegetables.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't think you have to wonder very hard.
You know, the name of this thing is Surviving the 21st Century. Sometimes I wonder how we survived the 20th.
Right.
Yeah,
I want the video.
Are you with Simon?
Simon, we're worried about you.
We're worried about you, Simon.
You know, we're actually getting down to the end of the show, and let's talk about something positive. Basically, people can vote at the market. They can vote by buying organic foods. They can vote by buying foods from local farms and supporting the people who are concerned about their health. One of the things that Ashley does that I think is really important is when she shops, she gets up on their face and says, "Where is this from? Who grew this particular product? You know, why are you selling it? Where is it from?" And getting more data. And interestingly enough, as she gets more data, the truth comes out. And the other one that shocks me about this, because we have this conversation constantly, is that basically most people in the market have no clue where their food comes from. So when you ask them these questions, much like Simon's joy of walking the market and saying, "Can you show me where the high fructose corn syrup is?" Cash will say, "Is this wild fish or is this factory farm fish?" And their eyes roll around their head going, "Ugh," and they just go blank. And one of our problems in the country is we're not educating America's youth. When I was young, I was taught the ways of farming, although I grew up in a ranch in Los Angeles, back when Los Angeles was small enough to have ranches. The fact is, everybody I grew up with knew how food was put together. Everyone knew basically how your food got to the table. We went to dairy farm trips when we were kids and in school. They made you do all of that, made you look at how everything hits your table. Now, I don't think anyone would dare take a child to a factory farm and let them see what was going on and say, "This is the way America's food is made." So to those people in the factory farming business and those people in industry who are listening to us, you have to ask yourself, are you proud to take your children to these places? Are you proud to be in this industry? Are you proud when your children walk down the road and see dead animals in the ditches from these factory farms and all the atrocities that are listed? Because it will scar children. It's going to have a far-reaching effect on this generation of children. And basically, studies show that children exposed to this level of abuse when they're young tend to become everything from sociopaths to serial killers to torture of animals. And what we're fostering is an atmosphere of violence towards animals that will get translated into violence towards humans. And if you have any doubt, just read all of the studies available on basically serial killers who all have a history of torturing children when they're, or excuse me, of animals when they're younger, and later.
It's absolutely one of the things with it starts
right.
off with some of these personality disorders.
So what we're fostering is an atmosphere where children can't walk to school, they can't be around this, they can't eat food from these various places. And so what are we doing to ourselves? What are we doing to our children? What are we doing in this world to people? And if you're in the CAFO business and you're proud of it, you know, wonderful. I'm really happy for you. But I can tell you, you should be embarrassed about your conduct. You should be embarrassed about what you're doing to our country. And if there are any final thoughts, Ashley, do you have any?
That pretty much wraps it up. I was going to ask, what kind of personality disorder do you think can happen to your child being raised watching animals who are beaten to death? I think that's a, you know, it doesn't matter if they come out and say it's going to be illegal. That picture is still going to remain, it's going to be illegal for your child to register that picture in their brain, because that picture is going to be registered in their brain and affect their personality for life. And not only that, but the fact that we didn't have time today to go into other things, but, you know, next time let's talk about the emissions coming from the air that cause personality disorders.
And you will be back, won't you, Jim?
Yes, in fact, that was one of the things Francis was going to talk about today, was some new information
right.
about the air pollution emanating from hog confinements and the effects that they have.
Well, if you can get around it.
I suspect that Francis was kidnapped by Cargill.
Let's hope not.
I can see it now. Right now there's a representative saying, you have some relatives in the other country?
Folks, I really do have to wrap this program up. The producer is whining in my ear. Jim, I really, really want to thank you for taking time out to talk with us today. It's been fun as always, and you have an invite to join us any week.
Well, anytime something specifically comes up that I can help shed a little light on, I'd be glad to. You people are delightful to talk with, and I hope that our discussion today and all the ones that you have on surviving the 21st century start to have some positive impact.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much.
And Manny and Ashley, again, thank you. I mean, you do all the heavy lifting. I just ask the stupid questions.
Not hardly. Thank you so much.
Okay. Till next week, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe and healthy weekend. We'll be back again next Saturday. Till then, goodbye.